This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of life, the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. Rewind to SmackDown.
And it is John Pollock and Neil Flanagan going through Friday's edition of SmackDown from the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. And nothing set the tone better, Neil, than our host of the evening, Wade Barrett, citing the Constitution and domestic tranquility in the proximity of the White House. No bigger things of value and merit than the Constitution and domestic tranquility in these choppy waters.
Indeed, yeah, that's the theme for these past few weeks. It's no wonder that the Fox News shows are doing so well, I think, in the cable ratings.
Well, tonight we had WrestleTix announcing 12,456, the last figure. On the broadcast, they announced a number well over 13,000, big attendance, as is pretty much standard fare for Raw and SmackDown these days. And Joe Tessitore was off tonight calling Top Rank. So in to replace him, we got a mini old NXT reunion with Vic Joseph filling in for Joe Tessitore. And I thought Vic Joseph filled in seamlessly, essentially.
Absolutely. I think he did a really good job here. I know there were plenty of references on social media during the show or the beginning of the show to Corey Graves and sort of this could have been you, blah, blah, blah. And is this still part of his punishment? But I think people forget that Vic and Barrett have some built-in chemistry already because, as you just said, it's an NXT reunion. You know, they called together before. Vic's very good in the play-by-play role and he demonstrated that this evening. So I don't know how much of this is still Corey in the doghouse as opposed to just Vic's a good guy to stick into this spot.
Well, Cody Rhodes starts the show and he comes out to discuss the Elimination Chamber. And with Jey Uso choosing Gunther, it means whoever wins Elimination Chamber will face him at WrestleMania. And he lists off the names that have qualified, leaving John Cena for last, getting the loudest reaction, but says it won't be Solo Sikoa, who has not qualified and there are no qualifying matches left. And brings up the Samoan spike that was that was hit at the end of the show last week when Drew McIntyre comes out. And Drew takes issue with Cody rushing through his name among the list. So Cody redoes it and Drew lists off all of his accolades and mentions that Cody has attacked him and you've made it personal. And Cody mentions that Drew is one of the few men that have beat him since returning to WWE, and I have not forgotten. So he's got to get that win back at some point. Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga come out, and Fatu refers to Braun and Damian Priest that he's going to, quote, dog walk their ass, and he's bringing the title back home to his family. Drew suggests that the two of them fight, but then backs off, leaves because he's already qualified for the chamber. So Cody is left with Fatu and tells him to win the chamber and then you and I can fight over this. And this was the beginning of these Fatu chants that the crowd was eliciting and would continue in the main event. But Jacob Fatu's his attention is taken away when Solo Sikoa and his turtleneck pull up in the driveway backstage and Fatu stops Cody, says, I've got to speak with Solo first. And Cody says, that's fine. I'll get the last word with him. And what was on Solo Sikoa's mind? That would be the question of the next 175 minutes of the show.
Yeah, a good opening segment, though. I think, you know, this grabbed my attention. I like the fresh dynamics of Drew on SmackDown and so on. But, yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before Jacob Fatu is at least a baby face to the audience, if not, you know, in his conduct on these shows. The chants, his promos are incredibly crowd-friendly. that, you know, they love some of his phraseology. I'm all gas and no brakes tonight and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, his popularity, I think, is only going one way. And I don't know if you can say the same about Solo Sikoa, who technically outranks him, in, I guess, still in the bloodline. So, interesting.
Tama Tonga, after the break, is backstage. They're looking for Sikoa. And this PA gives Tama directions. And then Fatu just runs this guy over, just kills him.
Yeah. Poor this guy. Like, I mean, had no health and safety at this workplace anyway.
None. No, no. Didn't have his constitutional rights upheld here. Wade Barrett interviews Trish Stratus, who's just here in the front row. Just wanted to take in SmackDown in Washington after this this blizzard getting out of Toronto. It must have been a hell of a trip for her to get to Washington from Toronto over the last 24 hours. But mentions that she was 25th in the Royal Rumble, which was appropriate given this is her 25th anniversary. And she will be at Elimination Chamber, but obviously an angle alert for later on. Naomi versus Chelsea Green is our Elimination Chamber qualifier, where Bianca Belair is in Naomi's corner and Green has Niven with her. Naomi hits a series of axe kicks early on, and after the break, Naomi hits a scissors kick and then a heat seeker, goes for the split leg and moonsault and misses, allowing Green to hit what Barrett says some might call a rough rider. And there's a backstabber out of the corner. Green comes off the top to try to roll into the unprettier. This was definitely unpretty and missed it. Hit with the X Factor, and now Naomi connects with the split-legged moonsault, winning the match in 8 minutes and 27 seconds as Naomi joins Belair, Liv Morgan, Alexa Bliss, and Bayley.
Yeah, I thought this match was going pretty well until the very end when there was that very awkward spot. But yes, not much to say about it, really.
Well, we would have more. We've got an anonymous tip coming up later on this show.
Indeed.
So buckle up, everyone. We're going to get some inroads on this. The slowest investigation in pro wrestling history. Then we had a video update from Sami Zayn. He's not doing great. His neck is injured. And he notes how it's a joke how many times that we've turned on each other, but this was different. This wasn't about proving a point or winning a match or advancing in your career. This was about ending my career. And for what? Because I wasn't there for you? Because I didn't cost Cody the match? Even though I was out there calling for help, concerned about you at the Royal Rumble? I'm not sure when I will be cleared, but when I am, we're going to go again, and it won't be fun. I'll see you soon, Kevin. A great promo here from Sami Zayn.
Very good promo, yeah. Doing his best to sell this as a freshen up this pairing.
This one's different. When you power bombed me onto the edge of an apron, when you put me through a ladder bridge at Final Bat, all those other times, unprotected chair shots to the head, this one was different. It was
the package pile driver.
Yes, the package pile driver that I don't understand. Like, I do understand that they used it for the Cody angle to set up the ladder match, but the fact that it was the move that's taken out Randy forever. It's now the move that was supposed to end Sammy's career. Cody was gone like a week. He's gone a week.
And Sammy's going to be back in 2 weeks.
Well, he's going to be back. Well, at least he'll get multiple weeks out of this. But yes, yeah it's anyway, Randy, you know, he just fell on the wrong angle. Then they showed the Michelle McCool footage from ESPN. Motor City Machine Guns against Los Garza. Well, they lost someone this week because out comes Santos Escobar and no sign of Electra Lopez and no mention of Electra Lopez. It's always that awkward thing where a group has lost someone and they've got to come out. And I mean, the one that was so obvious was when Candace came out and did almost like the tribute to Indy where she puts her hand up where Indy would meet her. And it was like, this is just so weird. Like, we can't even have a story reason. Like, you know what? She's been deported. Nothing. I mean, there's a storyline in today's current climate that you could go with.
That's true. Yeah. And I think in fairness to NXT, I think they did have a couple of... They tried to explain the absences of one or two of their cuts, I think, ahead of time. But here it was... There is no ahead of time. Sonya Deville did an interview, I think, that was... the day before the cuts, no talking about her.
Yeah. I mean, Elektra was on the show last week when they were starting the cuts, and then it was over the weekend we heard her name. I think it was the next day. So That said, I thought they had a very nice tag match here. Yeah. Little Scarza, very underrated. When they get time, and especially with a team the caliber of the Guns, they really get to show out. Saban eventually gets a hot tag here. They did a double team missile dropkick into a flatliner onto Berto. And a Garza lifts up both of them. And Berto comes off the rope with like a disaster kick. So Saban gets like slammed down, as does Shelley. And Garza hits this Orihara moonsault to the floor. Berto goes for his own moonsault. Saban gets the feet up. And then Saban dives through Shelley's legs to the floor. And they finish off Berto with skull and bones. And the Machine Guns get the win.
Really good match, I thought, with four really good workers. And easily for me, the wrestling match of the show. And I was kind of glad that I tuned in on time for this, because even during the break, it was kind of fun as well. For international viewers, we get to see the whole match if you really want to.
Yes, we got to see all the matches in all their entirety on the show, if you were catching up live. Then we had a Damian Priest video as he was like sipping on bourbon, talking about moving to SmackDown. I guess that's, he drinks.
Yeah.
What a badass. Fatu and Tama finally find Solo Sikoa. This was after a 45 minute search, and the PA had told them where he was. But here we go. They ask, what the hell's going on? Sikoa explains, I needed time off. And then one of them was about to say, well, that meant they probably froze your contract for a few weeks, and says that he has not been himself since losing the Ulafala. I let you down, but I'm good now. I'm ready to take over this business, but we need to do it together. And it starts with you winning your qualifying match tonight. And then he grabs Jacob by the arm. Jacob, I love you. Fatu did not seem moved here, but this was the closest we got to any kind of a Valentine's Day segment on the show.
True, yeah. And then he got a bit of a death stare from Tama Tonga as well for good reason.
Didn't care for this.
But he does come. Jacob still comes off as the senior member here, I think. You know, despite Solo has a great presence. He's not as good in ring as Jacob, but he's just being outshone on both departments now, I think.
I think that as we look at this, this was a lot to throw at Solo Sikoa. Like, he was a great, like, the silent muscle that was kind of the background player. He played that role really well.
Yeah.
And now he's been thrust to the leadership role over this last year. And I just think it's been one where, you know, you understand why, you know, it does take a certain, like, character depth and experience to have kind of that ability to be able to make that big pivot. Like, and I think we've seen the difference here. Like, when a Jacob Fatu, he just commands every scene he's in, and the audience takes to it. And Sikoa, it's been more of a struggle, I think, to get that presence. But these three playing off each other and wherever this is going, maybe this will be of some value for Solo Sikoa. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Plus, two editions of Rewind Away. We will revisit Bret Hart's heel run in the WWF NXT TakeOver New Orleans from 2018. Plus, we have coverage of AEW Grand Slam Australia, New Beginning in Osaka, an Ask Away, Ask Us Anything mailbag show, and of course, Captain America 4 and Collision Course every single Saturday night. All that and more at postwrestlingcafe.com. Shinsuke Nakamura is out for a live promo in the ring. We were giving the subtitles a week off here, and man, he tried to cut this promo. This audience was not having any of it, as they just wanted him out of the place, and you could barely make out what he was saying. But he wants a worthy challenger. He is praying for a test, and LA Knight was going to answer this test. He comes out, he was robbed when the Bloodline cost him the championship match. And then The Miz comes out and he mocks the fans for still going for all that shtick of LA Knight, who he called a flash in the pan before. But these fans, they're uneducated. They're basic. And Knight makes fun of every single Miz promo, where he runs down all of the titles he's won, beating John Cena at WrestleMania, says that The Miz was relevant 10 years ago. But I'm glad you came out here, Miz, because it made me remember that you were even around on this show. Maybe you can do a farewell tour so you can just go away. And Miz then pretends to cry. and he keeps this act up. And Knight looks like he's about to break here when they cut to him. And Miz is mentioning that you said it was okay for men to cry last week. So Knight calls, you know what? You and Drew are crybaby bitches. And Miz then says, the reason I tout my resume is because guys like you don't measure up. You're not even on my radar. I want a shot at the United States Championship. And Knight makes the argument that as much as I want that title needs me. And he tells Miz, you suck. You're an impotent dork. And then they get into a, they go to give the BFT to Miz, but Miz escapes and Aldis comes out to make the match.
A very good talking segment.
This was also a really great standing segment because Nakamura stood and listened to all of this, and then he stood for another 12 minutes for this match.
Indeed he did, yeah, without making any facial expressions. I felt a bit for Nakamura at the beginning, you know, because I could understand what he's saying, but he started in Japanese, and that was going to get the what chance going because he flipped between languages. But then, as you said, he just sort of faded into the background, standing there as Miz and LA Knight went at each other verbally, which was significantly better than them going at each other physically, which was to come after the break.
Well, Knight and Miz had their match, and yeah, they went just over 10 minutes here. The blunt force trauma gets blocked early on, and then Miz gets the heat. They go to the floor, and then Miz's head gets bashed into the desk, and then Knight gets into Nakamura's face, and this allows Miz to capitalize, sending him into the steps. Knight fights back. The skull-crushing finale is countered, and then Miz recovers with a DDT, catches the blunt force trauma out of nowhere, but now Knight's using the elbow drop instead of the setup. It is now the finisher as he pins the Miz in 10-14, and then Nakamura enters the ring, and the showdown is being teased, Neil. LA Knight, Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah. This was sort of set up almost as a title. You know, when Nick Aldis first came out, I got the impression this is going to be the winner gets the title shot. That was not clear afterwards. It was kind of, you've got to think the winner gets a shot down the line, I think was what we got from commentary.
I think that's what we're going to get. We're going to get a title match, but not next week. Maybe it'll be in 2 weeks. Yeah, I don't think they're holding off until Mania for this one.
I wouldn't think so, no. And the match itself was... this put me in mind of what...
When you looked at your watch? I'm like, oh my God.
I must admit, yes, I did look at the time at this point and think, oh, okay. Should I watch this one through the break? You know, maybe not. Miz, by the way, I did, and Miz ate some fans' popcorn for some cheap heat, which was...
He did during one of the breaks. He went and took a fan's some popcorn from a fan.
It wasn't a great match. It put me in mind of Danielson's criticism of Miz, you know, at the way back on Talking Smack with the safe WWE style. This was two proponents of that style doing one of their matches. It's not for me.
These two together, to me, are not... they don't click for me. And it seems like in this modern format that when, if the crowd is not going your way or you have some concerns about it, there's nothing wrong with near falls, lots of near falls. And the audience, 9 times out of 10, near falls will get a "this is awesome" chant and boom, they get them. And I think it's a very easy time to do that as well. So yeah, I didn't think anything special here, but that takes us to Knight and Nakamura. To be determined when. Alexa Bliss walks up to Nia Jax and Candice LeRae and wishes her good luck, makes fun of LeRae for losing last week, and then we get a Wyatt 6 interruption mid-shot, and then mentions that if Nia wins tonight and she wins the chamber, we could have another WrestleMania match together, which don't know if that's the likelihood of that one happening. And and that was it. That was Alexa Bliss. Her whole night was condensed to these 30 seconds.
Yeah, Lily and I were thinking it would be fun to have and then, you know, some of her, what she said was interrupted by the Wyatt 6 glitch, so yeah. She was actually...
We don't even get a QR code now. Now it's just, just a flicker on your screen, so. Miz runs into Andrade backstage. Talk about this angle that, my God, I am just so curious to see what it leads to. Andrade says, you know, Miz, I could teach you something. Just let me know. So this is a turnaround from Miz offering help to Andrade. Mm-hmm. And Carmelo Hayes walks in and says, people like Andrade don't respect talent like us, and Miz suggests they team up as Mello Don't Miz. Just dreadful. R-Truth and Carmelo Hayes is next. This was set up earlier in the day when R-Truth approached Carmelo Hayes about him taking out Akira Tozawa, and Hayes had to explain, "I had to show him that I'm him." And Truth said, "But you're not Tozawa. You're Carmelo Hayes." They argued over this and toothpaste, and this led to a match being made.
The definition of that escalated quickly, because like Mello was friendly with him at first. When R-Truth walks in, calls him the OG, you know, he's just, you know, getting the final touches done in the barbershop. And the I'm him, no, he, you're not Tozawa stuff. You know, it's classic R-Truth humor, but Mello has clearly absolutely zero sense of humor because, you know, I'm going straight to Aldis. Because I'm not having this. You know?
Well, this is the show where you have a beef during the day. You can probably get a segment on the show, knowing the booking here. So, you know, Truth does his Cena spots, goes for the five-knuckle shuffle, and is stopped with a super kick. Hayes hits the first 48, and then after an AA gets stopped by Hayes, he clotheslines him in the back of the head and hits nothing but net. So Hayes is now starting to rack up some wins here. 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Hayes gets the win.
Yeah, and you know they're stretching a show when R-Truth gets his full rap entrance, you know, on camera. And then, you know, and a singles match, which they noted was his first on SmackDown since 2019.
And there was really no angle to this. Like, there was nothing coming out of this. It was just like, here's a match. That's it.
Give Mello a win, you know, a quick win, and have Barrett say, "Mello, I'm not going to try and do the voice, actually. Climbing the rankings once again," he laughably says after this win. So anyway.
We had another Street Profits video. They ruffled some feathers, but they just told the truth last week. They're putting the tag division on notice, and we're going to put you in the dirt. The frustration has been burning inside them for years. So they're coming for all the teams. Byron speaks with Pretty Deadly. They beat DIY last week, so they are receiving a title shot next week, and they are done being underestimated. So DIY enter. They're disappointed. We had something special, and you guys threw it all away. And whatever happens to you guys next week, it's on you. And then we will give your career a moment of silence. So they are going to battle to the death next week.
Mm. Not a massive sell for me on this title match next week. I think the result is somewhat predictable. But we'll see, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
at least Pretty Deadly feel like tasty snacks again. I think that's the key thing.
Well, this match will take place in New Orleans next week, the same city that featured Gargano versus Ciampa at NXT TakeOver New Orleans, which will be the subject on Rewind Away next Thursday, right before this episode of SmackDown.
What a segue.
We get Kevin Owens' response. He ran out to his car after he saw this Sami Zayn promo to cut his own and Dropbox it over. He's not doing well either, he says in response to Zayn, because I've been stabbed in the back by Cody, Orton, and Sami, and you don't know what real pain is, but I'm going to show you. And yeah, we are going to go again. And why don't we go where it all started? I was like, oh, they're going back to, you know, some outpost outside of Maryville. No, they're going to Canada, and whether you're cleared or not, we will face at Elimination Chamber. I was like, I think a clearance is probably required for this match to take place, and then you will know pain. So there you have it. Owens versus Zayn at the Rogers Center.
Yeah, and I've no doubt this is going to be a tremendous match with a crowd that are super hot for it. So
It's the right place to put it on. I mean, it's and it's kind of interesting of like what this bleeds toward WrestleMania for as well with these two.
I'm intrigued by that. You know, what direction do they go in afterwards? It doesn't feel like it should be a one and done, but you know, we're still 60 odd days from WrestleMania, so there's plenty of road ahead.
Very good promos, I thought, from Zayn and Owens and setting up this match, which, I mean, it will be very interesting to see if this kind of moves some tickets now for Elimination Chamber in these final 2 weeks. Like, it is a big match for your Canadian audience as well.
Yeah.
Tiffany Stratton against Nia Jax for the Women's Championship. Charlotte Flair is showing backstage, watching the match. And so the beginning minutes of this match, I thought this thing was just going to fall apart because it just felt like their timing was so awkward with one another. Like, it was as though they just didn't, like, Stratton didn't know, like, how to sell the power. They just were not connecting. They then got into a rhythm eventually, which was pretty much Jax just beating the shit out of her in this. And Jax was actually a very good heel here. They were actually getting dueling chants, and she just, like, turned the crowd fully against her. She's doing the Hogan ear cup to the crowd and just doing a lot of power moves on Tiffany. So then Tiffany, like, fires up and hits this double stomp after knocking Jax off balance. And then Jax hits a Samoan drop off of the turnbuckle for a two count with Stratton coming down on her side, which looked like a lot of fun. Then there's a leg drop off the second buckle by Nia. That gets a two count. We went through two commercial breaks here. And during one of the commercials, we get an annihilator that gets stopped with a powerbomb off the turnbuckle for a near fall. Stratton hits the moonsault to the floor and then in the ring lands a swanton, which looked incredible. Stratton tries to lift up Jax, but Jax collapses on top of her. And then we go to another annihilator tease. And Stratton, again, goes out from underneath her to powerbomb her, which we had seen, I think it was during the commercial break.
It was.
But Stratton just, like, takes a back bump to the ground while trying to lift her, as they explain she was headbutted, and she rolls under the rope, but Jax continues to go for the annihilator when Stratton is nowhere near, so she just crashes. I didn't know what the idea was here. I didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know what the miscommunication was, but this just looks so bizarre.
Yeah, the beginning of the match, like you said, was very disconnected, and I didn't know whether to, you know, who to blame, because I think Nia has come on a very long way recently, or whether it's just terrible chemistry or what. They're just missing their spots. Then it got very good, I thought.
And the crowd was really with this. I'm not going to downplay that.
The crowd was really into it. Yeah.
Like, again, like, they got into some big near falls, and Stratton had, like, some big moves that she was hitting, like the moonsaults and the swanton. Like, this crowd was really getting into it.
The double stomps looked great. The attempt to lift Nia and then collapsing under her was sold really well. But yeah, this annihilator onto nothing, it just looked daft.
Yeah, it was like you had some highs and lows in this match, including a sky high by Tiffany. And then she goes for the prettiest moonsault ever. And this is, again, this is after 17 minutes. Candace just grabs her for the DQ and the fans are livid. Yeah. There was a purpose for it. Like, 9 times out of 10, I hate when they do such a long match and such a cheap finish, but there was a purpose to this. I guess you had to get to this post-match. So Jax and Candace attack her. First there's an avalanche, then an annihilator, and Candace grabs a chair. And I think everyone knew what the spot was going to be here, because then coming to the rescue is Trish Stratus, who shoves Nia to help Tiffany, who the last we had seen, these two were, like, at each other's throat at Money in the Bank when Tiffany was a heel. But maybe that will be down the road. But anyway, turns her back to Jax, and Jax splashes Trish, leaves her laying, and hits Tiffany with a leg drop. So we can fast forward to this will be the tag match at Elimination Chamber. So getting another Canadian on the card.
I did wonder if there was a more creative way to get to this tag match, because, like you, you know, after 17 minutes or so of a title match, it really doesn't make sense that Nia is, you know, delighted that she
was
disqualified.
Like, she was in joy at this when, in theory, Candace is just costing. This was very similar to what we had with the Creeds on Monday, where it's like you got this title shot and then you get yourself disqualified. Like, I agree. I feel like we could have satisfied both. Getting to this tag match and saving Tiffany while also giving something that was not just more satisfying, but also a bit more logical than Candace stopping Tiffany here when Nia was not even in. It was a wonky finish.
If it was a disqualification because there's a 99% chance, you know, her teammate's going to lose, then fine. But, you know, there's no way of knowing that Nia wouldn't be able to kick out, you know, of the moonsault. So, yeah, that kind of irritated me a little bit, just to see Nia so pleased about all of this, you know, when her final chance on the road to WrestleMania for a title match has, you know, been taken away. But anyway.
Well, after Trish just like disappears into thin air while Stratton is left laying in the middle of the ring, and none of the trainers are tending to her. They all took care of Trish. So Stratton's dead here in the middle of the ring. Charlotte comes out and sits next to Tiffany in a chair and tells Tiffy to wake up. And then out of nowhere, the queen chooses you. And boom, we've got our WrestleMania match with Charlotte and Tiffany Stratton, as most had expected. I think Wei's going to be disappointed with this one, though. He was really pushing for that Rhea-Charlotte rematch. But so you do have the direction, which is kind of interesting, because this match at Elimination Chamber, I guess you could have Charlotte like somehow get involved in that, but it's totally divorced from Charlotte, and it has no ramifications on the match either.
Yeah, good point. Not one that had struck me tonight.
Unless you do something with Trish, but I just don't know where you get there. Like, Tiffany and Trish seemed like a direction they were going. I don't see Tiffany turning anytime soon when you've just got her into this babyface role, and she should be the babyface against Charlotte. Like that, like she worked well as a babyface in this match, and this was one of the longer matches we've seen from her on the main roster.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any chance of them turning her heel ahead of, you know, not even, it's the dynamic here is pretty clear between Charlotte and Tiffany, I think. On a total side note, I'm very glad that they seem to have dialed down the Tiffy time references a little bit.
Well, we did have this backstage segment, but I think over that one promo was, I think everyone realized it was like, okay, that was overkill to a degree, and this is a nice little nickname, but let's not beat it into the ground, which used to be the old kind of MO for the company when they got something that they were really in love with.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So then we go to Detective Aldis, and, you know, he's been... Maybe that's the reason the SmackDown show often doesn't get booked until the show has begun. He's been busy tracking down tips on this Jade Cargill attack that happened months and months ago. And he meets with Naomi and Belair. There has been a development in the Jade situation. I was like, oh my God, stop the presses. And they say, finally. And they received an anonymous tip. An anonymous video clip that was sent to them. Untraceable, Neil. Not a chance of finding out who this was. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe Doge has gotten into the security detail and they came across this. And they play a clip of the night Jade was attacked. And off into the distance are Liv Morgan and Raquel, who are walking by. And, Nick Aldis was the most logical person here, who says, now this does not confirm anything, but boy, were Naomi and Belair ready to just, they were ready to give the death penalty to these two. I would not want these two to be on a jury, is all.
Certainly
I would
say. Not. This was thin evidence at best. You know, it's taken after the fact, for one thing. It's from the level of the ambulance, as far as I can tell. You know, it's, you know, and they just happen to be walking around, walking past at some distance. It must be said. If anything,
who was recording? Who was like the peeping Tom that was just off in the watchtower filming this?
Yeah. Well, my storyline explanation is that probably Naomi was filming, and she is the anonymous.
Right, because we do see the footage of Belair running out to check on Jade that aired on TV. But you don't see Naomi. So, and Naomi's the first one to jump in with the, I knew it. Yeah. So I think this will have a pretty satisfying conclusion at the end of it. And this is sort of your red herring to put Liv and Raquel as the culprits.
It's pretty funny, though, that, you know, Jade is tweeting away, every week, and no one's thought to ask her. You know, she's certainly not unconscious, still unconscious.
Did you see anyone? You make out? Was it two people? Was it one? Any clues, Jade? No, I've just, unfortunately, I have short and long term amnesia. But Paul Levesque loves to book his parking lot attacks, and he's getting to do a main roster one. Saxton is with Tiffany, who reacts to all of this news. He like recaps the Nia match, the DQ, the attack, Trish coming to save her, and Charlotte has also named you as the opponent for WrestleMania. Your thoughts? And Stratton is just like, yeah, it's a lot. So Trish comes in and suggests a tag match at Elimination Chamber. So as they call it, Tiffy and Trishy time in Toronto.
Yeah, fair enough use of the catchphrase here. Trishy time kind of works, so why not?
Drew walks up to Jimmy Uso. Jimmy Uso had just as much time on this show as Alexa Bliss did, and makes fun of him for not having anything set for WrestleMania. His career's going into the toilet, but at least you married up, and Jimmy walks off the screen and then super kicks Drew. So that match is happening next week. Got a nice walk and talk promo with Braun. It's been 5 damn years since I've been champion. And it's probably going to be a minimum 5 damn years before anyone is talking about it. He tells Cody, you better be watching. I'm like, this is the last pairing that we will expect for WrestleMania. The Cody Braun showdown that none of us had thought about. So next week, besides Jimmy and Drew, we also have the tag title match with DIY and Pretty Deadly. But the main event is Braun Strowman, Jacob Fatu, and Damian Priest in the qualifier. A lot of time that they got here. We had Fatu using the steps, which Vic called the werewolf intensity that Jacob Fatu was exuding here on Braun. Priest and Fatu go at it in the ring. Priest then goes for old school, and Fatu launches him into a Samoan drop off the top. We got a Tower of Doom spot with Braun launching them. And then to the floor, Priest delivers a flatliner to Fatu on the desk. Braun then pounces Priest over the desk and chokeslams Fatu. This desk withstood all of this. They weren't screwing around when they reinforced.
It's reinforced.
Yeah, you aren't breaking these. Fatu then hits super kicks in the ring and then hits 3 consecutive hip attacks to Braun. Just like Saturday night's main event. Then he gets a chair, puts it around the neck in the corner, but Braun boots him out of the corner and fights back. Eye for an eye! As he, I will say, tries to put this chair around Fatu's neck. Mm. It was balanced at such a degree that if Jacob Fatu had sneezed, this chair was going to fall off him. But it is stopped because, like magic, Solo Sikoa appears and Samoan spikes Braun. So he's dead. There's a moonsault by Fatu. Cody runs down. He goes after Solo. Tama's out. And then Solo Sikoa, don't you hate it when this happens, misses his target in Cody, who ducks, and he spikes Tama with the Samoan spike. Jacob Fatu just sees this and confronts Sikoa. So then Priest knocks Sikoa into Fatu. There's a crossroads onto Sikoa, and Priest returns south of heaven, pinning Braun, and Damian Priest qualifies. And Cody and Priest are left in the ring to ponder their potential meeting as they stare lovingly into the sign, the WrestleMania sign, and then shake hands to end the Valentine's Day edition of SmackDown.
Yeah. A pretty good main event, you know, in terms of setting up what's next and entertainment value. You know, Jacob coming out on his own is a complete red flag that you're going to get some bloodline angle toward the end, which we did. Fairly convoluted, I thought, this, you know, the Cody, the Jacob going after Solo, the missed spike, all of that. But they all hit their marks, so to speak. And it was pretty good.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Elimination Chamber lineup, but I'll give everyone some notice. If you want to jump into the room, we're going to be taking some calls as we sign off on the free end. But besides the 2 chamber matches, we now have Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, as well as the tag match with Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus against Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. And I guess the question is if they're going to end up getting to like Cody and Sikoa or some sort of combination for Elimination Chamber, just to get Cody on that show in some form or fashion.
That's what I see. Yeah, it's the last PLE before WrestleMania, and I think that, you know, that's clearly the direction they seem to be going in.
And I think you want to have Cody there for that. That closing shot should be the winner of the chamber match, and Cody comes out or something. Sure. Like that should be the visual at the end. Like, you know what the main event is with Cody's match for Mania. So anyway, how do you feel the Elimination Chamber card is coming together?
Pretty good, yeah. I'm not sure I'd be spending, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Canadian dollars on attending the event. In fact, they're coming to Belfast in the end of March, and the ticket, when I used to go to the house shows on the European tour, because it's very handy to me, the ticket prices were what I would consider pretty reasonable, and they are now what I would consider unreasonable. And you know, I've seen WWE house shows; they're very entertaining, but not worth, I think, what they're pricing them at these days. But what you're getting in Toronto is a PLE. That's on a different level. I think the Elimination Chamber card is shaping up pretty nicely, and we're going to get another addition or two to it, in particular the WWE champion.
We're being corrected here that Naomi was in the shot with the ambulance, so it can't be her that was filming.
Ah, right, okay. Well, my theory's down the toilet then.
She could have an accomplice.
Bit like Jimmy's career. She could, yeah.
Well, we will...
Byron Saxton.
With bated breath. All right, we're going to sign off for all the free folks, but we'll quickly give a plug that if you want to jump on board and get the whole XL edition of Rewind to SmackDown, you can do so at postwrestlingcafe.com. Also on the cafe this weekend, late Saturday night, Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal are going to be covering AEW Grand Slam from Brisbane. And then coming up on Sunday, we'll have a free show with Braden and Davey around 4 p.m. Eastern time going through NXT Vengeance Day. And for everybody out there, if you are considering jumping on board, we're going to be launching at the end of February the first ever book club for our Double Double and Espresso members, myself and Neil Flanagan, coming together where we are going to be reading what?
We're going to be reading Brian Gewirtz's account of his time in WWE Creative. The book came out in 2022. It has a very long title that is slipping my mind at the moment.
It's called There's Just One Problem, and there's a longer, like, kind of subtitle to it. But essentially, yeah. Yes, if you're looking for the book, that's the title.
And I will say it's a pretty light read. It's only a few hundred pages, and it's very entertaining.
I thought it would be a good one to start with because WWE Creative over the course of pretty much a 20-year period is probably a very interesting subject matter. So we were starting it off with a wrestling-themed book. And we've already decided what we're going to do for month number two. So tune in. That's going to be out the last week of February for our Double Double and Espresso members. Again, you can go to postwrestlingcafe.com. And that is it for the freeloaders. But the show continues. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.